Summer's a coming, and we're going to talk about irrigation here before we get to our calls. Did you know another trivia card fact here submitted by Mr. Brown out of Destin, Florida? A shade tree can reduce surface temperatures 20 to 40 degrees. And that was submitted by a guy out of Destin, Florida. I would say in Arizona in the, you know, the hottest months of the summer, you may push a little better than 40 degrees in some applications.
I think so. Yeah, we've that heat island effect is a pretty well researched subject. You know, that especially in Arizona, you know, having the temperature that the concrete in the buildings absorb during the day is released at night, and just you never really get this cool down period. But yeah, the trees can make a significant difference. You know, just so wonderful to just step out of that sun and just get into the shade of a nice tree. You know, Sarah and I have the privilege of being able to spend a fair amount of our days in people's beautiful yards, walking under trees and enjoying that shade value. And as temperatures increase in coming years, if they do, those trees are going to be even more critical. They say the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The next best time is today. So get out there, grab a tree in your local nursery and get one put in the ground. Well, we were talking a little bit more about irrigation. I wanted to just ask Sarah to tell us a little bit about your trees. I know you just bought a new home.
And I did.
You did a little bit of, I know you put in a new irrigation system. And I'd asked you off air, you know, did you bring water to your existing desert trees that are out there?
Well, I'm working on it. It's kind of a trench nightmare right now. But yes, I put in 12 different valves, and I put in two on either side of the acre of property that's just for the desert trees, the native trees. And I want to be able to, in the heat of the summer, or when we have months and months of no water, to just give them a one-time deep water. And I think that they're going to do much better.
Yeah, people, you know, often say, well, you know, once, you know, if it's a native tree, it doesn't need any additional water. Well, that's not really true. You know, in our planted landscapes, you know, we do have a, they may be native trees, but they don't have a native runoff. You know, if you look in the desert, the only trees that have survived in the desert are ones that are near either water coming down a hillside, like Sarah mentioned, or in the near the ravines if they're a riparian plant. So they have ideally they've adapted to their topography, and unless you have swales and have used some permacultural methods to try to encourage water retention in your yards and direct it to the base of your trees. Some of our desert trees just simply need, even though they're native plants, they actually do need supplemental water.
So I use those little heads that you get six emitters onto a head, mm-hmm. and they're 2 gallons an emitter. And so I spread it all the way around the drip line. And one of the key things that we see trees dying from the most is being watered at the base. Especially native trees, they just can't take it. So you got to make sure you place your irrigation correctly.
Yeah, keep those emitters away from the base of the tree. That sets up conditions for fungal pathogens to attack the root collar, which is really sensitive. And yeah, you just want to avoid that and keep that water away.
Kind of goes back to your point about the ocotillo's water like rain. Well, when the rain falls on these trees, the leaves and the canopy direct the water to the edge. Or at the end of the leaves. So that's
correct.
Where you want your drip emitters is, you picture water falling off the very edge of that last branch. That's where you want your drip emitter on the ground.
Correct.
Yeah.
All right. So shall we get to Lisa?
Let's do it.
Welcome to the program. It's 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you if you'd like to talk trees. Welcome, Lisa.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Very good, thank you.
Sorry, thanks for taking my call. We live in a orange grove with older trees that, you know, the neighborhood had been built in. I have one tangerine tree. Last March, early to mid-March, I had somebody come and clean out the underbrush. The gentleman said it was going to be too hot, so he did not clean out the canopy. But the tree over the summer just kind of didn't do well. I didn't have a lot of regrowth. And I lost a lot of leaves. It was like almost like it was fall and losing a lot of leaves. And I'm concerned that I'm going to, when this summer hits again, that I'm potentially might lose the tangerine tree, which I don't want to do or want to happen. And I didn't know if there's anything I can do. And I've been watering it ever since I saw that. I watered it up a storm, I should say, at least twice a week irrigation. And then our neighbor sometimes gets irrigation, and then he gives us his overflow. So it could had even been three times a week I was giving it water, a deep water.
Ooh, too much, huh? Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to drown the roots. The root zone needs oxygen just as much as it needs water. So that's why we encourage that, allowing that soil profile to dry out between waterings. And that will, always depend upon the depth of the root zone. Flowers and ground cover and shrubs and trees all have a different depth of roots. And so the frequency of watering will actually increase with the smaller plants. The flowers sometimes require almost daily watering because they're so shallow rooted and because of the intense heat of the summer, sometimes they need that kind of frequent watering. But you want to kind of keep those with your tangerine tree. That probably would have been a little bit too much water. But as you're heading into this new season, is the tree still alive? It still has some green on it, but the leaves are just thin? Is that correct?
Yes, that's accurate. And it did bloom and it did produce fruit. So I did get new fruit.
Well, it's a good sign. I would probably think about putting a shade cloth over the entire tree. I don't know how tall it is, but you can put stitch together some panels of shade cloth and drape them over the entire tree for this coming spring and summer. Because that will allow the 50-50 shade cloth is quite nice because it allows some sunlight to get through to continue to promote photosynthesis to keep the tree actively growing. But it will protect the bark, as Sarah was mentioning earlier. That the critical thing is to protect the bark from too much sun, which will cause sunburn. And once the bark of any of the interior branches or the trunk are sunburned, that cambium is destroyed, and there's no uptake of water and nutrients, and it's just the beginning of the end of a vicious cycle of defoliation and then further sunburn. So if you want to try to pull that tree out of this, you might want to think about that shade cloth.
And typically we recommend once a week in the summer, once every week to 10 days in the summer water for citrus, and once every 2 to 4 weeks in the winter. So you get a soil probe, you want to get that depth to 3 feet. Sometimes with irrigation, we water 2 or 3 times in one day to get the depth of water and then let it dry out. They don't like wet feet. And it sounds like it's an old established orchard too, which, there's a lifespan to some of the trees in Arcadia.
We've also had an issue with Phytophthora and some other fungal pathogens that get into some of these older citrus groves. And you might want to consider a fertilization program starting this spring to introduce some good quality nutrients, but also some biologicals, some other additives that we can add to the fertilizer mix, which will help to fight off some of the fungal pathogens that could be active. And especially if you had a little bit of maybe potentially some overwatering that was occurring, knocking down some of that fungal activity might be a part of that fertilization program that we could help you with.
And there's also organic fungicides that you can spray on the bark that help with the gamosis and the Phytophthora. So
the hard thing is overwatering and underwatering stress almost looks identical on the trees. So it's real easy to think this is a desert, it's hot, I need to add more water.
Yeah.
And in reality, the too much water is already the problem. But you also had citrus fertilizing on your talking tree points. So while we're on it, let's talk through proper citrus fertilization. I know Valentine's Day, Labor Day, Memorial Day, those were the holidays that have been used forever to remember to fertilize citrus. But you don't have to wait specifically for those times.
No, and those are just sort of markers on your calendar to remind you that you're to fertilize during those three periods of time. And those three periods of time are really windows that extend over a three-month period. You've got your February, March, and April is kind of our spring window, And then from there, you're May, June, and July, and then you're August, September, October. Those are the three kind of 3 month periods that we like to kind of target for our early, mid, and our late fertilization. So just using those kind of those holiday markers are good sort of reminders. But there's actually windows of time that are appropriate. What we like to do with citrus also, and the reason we promote this, not just with citrus but with all of our trees, is there are elements within the fertilization program that are really critical at different times of the year, and especially with citrus for the fruit development at each of those periods of time, they're needing that nutrient boost, and for proper fruit development, and we like to try to take an annual dosage of fertilization and divide it equally into three parts, and then distribute it at those three different times of year.
And I think the liquid fertilizers are much more beneficial. They drench into the soil. They soak and get all those feeder roots. There are granulars out there available. The key thing that people don't do is incorporate those into the soil. And so they become ineffective.
Yeah, and unless you have the water, broadcast throughout the entire area where the granular fertilizer has been applied, you're not getting the release of the nutrients to the plant.
But you do want to water the ground first, then put the fertilizer on, right? You want to apply it while the ground is wet.
Yeah, you can. That's why a liquid fertilizer is a really effective way to get that fertilizer into the soil. And we love to use the soil drench method because it kind of approximates the rainfall, and it's also a way to evenly distribute it throughout the entire root zone. Deep root fertilization is also a technique that we use, but it has specific applications where it's most effective, especially if you have trees that are growing in turf settings. We can push the injector below the root zone of the grass. Grass is pretty stingy. If you put fertilizer for trees over the lawn will get about 80 to 90% of the fertilizer. So the deep root fertilization allows us to push that down below the root zone of the grass and get it down to the trees where it's going to be more effective.
And a point for the granulars, the perfect time today would have been yesterday before the rain. for the granulars, you just missed the perfect time to naturally do it.
Yeah, but you've got to pull all the gravel back and you've got to incorporate that into the soil
to
have it even effective, or it's just mobile.